Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Deep Dive with me, Stephen and Tiffany. So Tiffany, what if you came into work and then I suddenly told you, thanks so much for your service, tomorrow is your last day?
Does my pass still work?
Oh.
Yeah, because I want to like contact my colleagues, I want to say bye to them, I want to pick up all my stuff that is on the table.
Okay.
Yeah, but okay, that would be my first reaction, that would be how my brain will, right, you know, react. But truthfully, I think I'll be very shocked.
Yeah,
I will wonder what I do wrong. Are there other people affected?
I know. What happened,
yeah,
right? Yeah. So for about 80 people, that was the case back in October when local bakery chain 12 Cupcakes suddenly announced its closure. They had no prior notice from the management. In fact, some of them learned about the closure when liquidators arrived at the office.
Yeah, and the Ministry of Manpower and the CPF board then said that the company is being investigated for non-payment of salaries and other potential breaches of the Employment Act.
Yikes.
And then in another case, art investment firm Artworks also went into liquidation. Okay. The abrupt closure left staff with unpaid salaries yet again, and several artists are still waiting for their art to be returned.
Oh boy, still hanging on the wall there.
Yeah.
So two cases in the span of 2 weeks. That's a lot. Is it time to relook at our employment laws to see how we can better protect our workers? What more can unions do to push for fairer treatment, especially when employers just leave their workers in a lurch? Well, with us today, we have Patrick Tay, Assistant Secretary General of the National Trade Union Congress.
Hi, Stephen. Hi, Tiffany.
And Amarjit Kaur, Head of Employment Law at Withers SG.
Hi, Stephen. Hi, Tiffany.
So I just want to start with, right now, the companies in Singapore with 10 or more employees, they need to inform the Ministry of Manpower within 5 days after they have carried out a retrenchment exercise. But then in countries like, you know, Canada and the UK, companies need to do so before the workers are retrenched. I mean, why don't we adopt something like this, Patrick, here in Singapore?
Yeah, I remember this vividly. It was a quite long conversation with our tripartite partners, i.e. the employers, as well as Ministry of Manpower, on, you know, when is the best time to do it. Of course, in most unionized companies, our usual provision, either by that collective agreement or some form of agreement, that early notification to the unions and subsequently to the workers is required. So by operation of collective agreement, which is a word of court, as well as other forms of agreements, we have that in place. However, as you rightly pointed out, quite a number of companies who are non-unionized may not have such provisions that safeguard them. And what we have now is the mandatory retrenchment notification, the provision sort of provided by the Employment Act, requiring companies within 5 days after they lay off workers to notify. But you're absolutely correct. Why 5 days after? So I think the original discussions on this was that, it may be sensitive. But some of these companies are listed companies, listed in global stock exchanges or even the local stock exchange. So therefore, if I give too early notification and someone lets the cat out of the bag or it goes to social media or there's an information leak, then it may affect the company and of course, not just reputation, but share price, etc. So that was one of the considerations I remember quite a number of years back when we were promulgating this mandatory retrenchment notification.
When you put it like that, then it sounds like we're putting a price on a person's career. We're saying, well, I'm sorry, you're not worth risking the company brand portfolio, my share price.
Exactly. I'm one of those that have been bringing up this issue on multiple occasions in and outside of parliament. I say, why not inform earlier? Like what most of our unionized companies do. I mean, we can always sign a non-disclosure agreement or some form of agreement to safeguard the company to prevent sabotage or whatever, you know, that may be prejudicial to the company. I think there can be measures that can be instituted because I think early notification is extremely important. Keep all parties apprised and aware.
And to mentally prepare yourself.
Exactly.
I mean, anyone losing a job will feel hurt about
Right? It's pure emotional distress. Yeah. I've myself personally been involved at least for the last 3.5 years in executing about retrenchment and layoffs about 7,000-8,000 workers. It's not an easy journey for our workers. So the last you want is to get it right in your face if it's such shock and such surprise without being contemporaneously being informed.
Okay, and I have to ask you then, what has the response been? Why do they say this is not tenable?
So this is something that we have brought up on behalf of the NTC and Labour Movement, and now I think if you look at the last 2 years, there have been a spate of such incidents happening where
yes.
there's late notification, mm-hmm. no notification, mm. or delayed notification, in whatever shape and form. And we have seen the effects or impacts to the workers. So
yeah.
therefore, we are in discussions with our tripartite partners to see whether we should review this and make it and maybe mandate early notification.
Amajit, I want to bring you into this conversation. I mean, when companies approach you before they're going to proceed with a retrenchment exercise, do they come to you and say, oh, by the way, is it possible if I circumvent this at all?
As in, don't tell my staff.
Yeah, don't tell my staff, and then do the whole 5 days after the retrenchment, yeah. then I'll report. Do they actually ask you for advice like that?
They do. They do. Right. I have to say candidly, quite a few of them do. Because, again, I think there's a lot of concern around creating mass panic and drama, and companies want to avoid that,
yeah.
which is why you will see that they may hold a town hall and just announce on the cusp of people being given letters. And in some cases, they're not even allowed to serve out their notice. So they're paid salary in lieu of notice,
mm.
which means effectively they're let go on the spot.
Mm.
Now, the hesitation to let employees know also spills over into sometimes a second track of notification, which is to the MOM. So we also have on occasion companies asking us, how do we sidestep this?
Mm.
Is there any way we can sidestep this, particularly if they fall within the notification requirements of having 10 or more employees?
Mm-hmm.
Are there ways to get around this? So, you know, they come with creative ideas, which we usually knock down pretty fast because you cannot contractually opt out of statutory obligations. If it's an obligation, then it should be upheld.
What do you tell them? How do you convince them that informing your staff prior to retrenchment is a good thing?
I think, as with all things, if you appeal to their interest, they will understand it much quicker.
Mm.
So usually I start off with, you know, you always want to attract and retain good talent.
Right.
Doing something like this doesn't serve a company well because it poses a great reputational risk. For example, if it comes out in the media and you get known for repeatedly on occasion or even on a one-off, trying to disadvantage your employees. It's not a good look. It will give you real issues in terms of hiring and keeping people. And also, it tarnishes your brand, right? Is this what you want to be associated with?
Okay.
Telling people on the spot, not giving them notice. And then, of course, you know, we are in an era of employee activism in Singapore, which we've not seen before. I think we are sort of, Patrick,
yes,
you
right.
may agree with me.
Yes.
You know, in the past, people would have just taken it, gone away and lived with it, right?
Right.
But now we are seeing employees going to the press, going to social media.
Yeah.
With the screenshots of their retrenchment.
Yeah. They're more empowered to speak up.
Yes, much more. And also, not just screenshots, we have live streaming.
Oh.
Yeah, we have people taking videos, audio recordings of these conversations, and they're making their way to social media and to the media.
Yeah.
So I would really highlight these risks to the employer to say you really should be thinking of this. And if you treat your people with dignity and respect, it always pays off in the long term.
And in my experience in dealing with retrenchments, the remaining workers are looking at how you're doing it.
Correct, exactly.
So you have it may not be a situation where you lay out everyone. There may be a big group of workers still left behind. Maybe just a small restructuring or reorganization.
Right.
So the remaining 80-90% of workers are looking at how you do it. So if the company can do that to these group,
you'd be like, what about me? You know?
And then they would start looking for other options.
So therefore, besides reputational risk, there's a lot of other HR or employee relations issues that may crop up as a result of not doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so when we look at cases like Toff Cupcakes and Artworks, which we mentioned earlier, what protections are we then missing for these employees here?
Yeah, I think that there are a few areas. Toff Cupcakes is a situation of a liquidation. So retrenchments can happen in a variety of situations. It could be a restructuring, a simple restructuring, reorganization, or just some downsizing, reshoring, offshoring, or in this case, liquidation. And the last you want is, everyone being caught by surprise and don't know what's their fate. And the worst thing is there may be people who are continuing working sometimes and not drawing salaries, because now, now there's a moratorium, and then your salaries are were much determined by the liquidator.
Mm. Okay, but again, you know, to the staff, the guy manning the counter at the cupcake shop, he's thinking, I don't care what your problem is. I just want to know why I don't have a job or why you're not paying me.
Mm.
And I'm almost thinking he would feel better if you had come to him and say, hey, John, exactly. we have an That's issue. Right. We're going to be back, unable to pay you for the next month. Are you okay with that? Yeah. And talk through it, right?
Yeah, I think it's some humane form of communication.
Yeah.
That's why in our, we actually have a tripartite advisory on this. It's been promulgated since 2008.
Mm. Okay.
Because of the global financial crisis, we came out with a tripartite advisory on managing excess manpower with added three words behind and responsible retrenchment.
Okay. But these are just guidelines again.
Exactly. Yeah. It's advisory.
Which means it's a suggestion. Yes. If you can do this.
Yes.
Which
so,
means...
so now we are, you know, at a tripartite partners discussion on whether we should elevate this.
Yeah.
Because as you know, in Singapore, we have advisories, guidelines, and of course, law. And guidelines, in a way, have a, well, a quasi-legislative effect. But more importantly, I think that the crux is, will companies comply?
Yeah.
Right.
I think we need to see compliance rates. We need to see whether is the notification rampant, or is it just, you know, people just take it
but
as window dressing.
The guidelines are just guidelines.
And they have no bite, right?
Yeah,
and no legal stand whatsoever. So as a company, I'm like, only if I benefit, I will follow the guidelines. If I don't, then...
Yeah, then thank you for the guidelines. Yeah. Noted with thanks.
So that's why we are a bit fortunate in our unionized environment. We have the collective agreement. So if they don't comply, if the early notification, we can bring them to court.
Mm.
I mean, well, in this case, a collective agreement is a ward of the Industrial Arbitration Court. So therefore, there are sanctions we can take. But unfortunately, the majority who do not fall within or are not union members or are not in the unionized company, that's where the challenge comes up. So that's why we are lobbying in a way for early notification.
Yeah, because if I'm looking for a job, I'm not going to find out which is a unionized company and which is a non-unionized company. I just pick the job, right?
And then
to reach that stage where I go, oh, I realize now it's a non-unionized company. What am I going to do? Because the guidelines are just suggestions.
What percentage of companies in Singapore are not unionized?
Mm.
Give us a rough gauge.
Well, I would say that easily our unionization rate is about slightly between 25 to 30% of our workforce.
Okay.
We'll be 1.4 million union members.
So another 70% odd are not?
Around about that, who are not unionized.
Okay.
Yeah, so therefore...
So there's more non-unionized than unionized, right?
Yes,
way more.
Yeah.
Yeah, because many of our companies in Singapore are small and medium enterprises.
Mm. Yeah,
and well, the large organizations, mostly the multinationals, are unionized. But you know, with small pockets of workers here and there in the SMEs, it adds up to a lot. Just like exactly the two cases we had.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, small organizations, but like I said, it's important and crucial that you know you have early notification.
So for all these companies then that are not unionized, I mean, what would these guidelines, nothing matters to them because they're like, I'm not part of your gang anyway.
Exactly.
So employers are strongly encouraged to adopt the advisory.
Okay,
I will use that wording. Under threat of administrative penalties if they don't.
But are there big administrative penalties?
The penalties are usually fines. And MOM on occasion has stepped in to curtail work pass privileges, which I think that's the most serious consequence for a company that tends to hire foreign workforce.
Mm.
That is relevant. Okay, so for employees who work for non-unionized companies, I think the struggle is across several fronts, right? It's firstly, as an employee, how do I prove it's a retrenchment? Because companies try on occasion to say, you know, you're a poor performer. And this comes on the back of very good performance ratings in previous years, good appraisals, because that gives them an out from having to report. Having to pay retrenchment benefits and having to report. Or we've also seen occasions where there are cases of misconduct that come out of nowhere and the employee's on the back foot because, you know, this, it doesn't feel sincere, it doesn't feel authentic, but yet I have a complaint against me. Or simply being told this is a contractual termination, but they've seen the writing on the wall that, you know, the company's downsizing or going through a reorg or their international announcements overseas of redundancies, but not in Singapore, and the company's denying that it's a retrenchment. So the
these
company's already on the back foot.
These are disguised retrenchments, all in a bit to not provide a payout.
Yes, and not have to report because sometimes they don't like it being in the press that they're going through a retrenchment or redundancy. I think they're still concerned about the reputational risk of being associated with reduction in force exercises,
right.
particularly if it stacks up over various jurisdictions, then people start to speculate on, you know, whether
the
they're successful,
health.
The company's financial health, etc.
But doesn't it look worse when they come out into the news like that for having not retrenched the right way in that sense,
fully
right?
Agree
I mean,
I think some of them are not, well, in a way, aware that there are such ramifications post exercise. So I think many of them just take it too lightly, and they may not know some of these repercussions to reputation,
okay,
as well as to the remaining workers who are left in the company.
Yeah. Yeah. So Patrick, you mentioned earlier that you are in talks with companies to try and make sure that these guidelines have slightly more teeth. Where are we in this the discussions, and what are companies telling
shared,
you?
In the United States, we are not too much of a concern because we have built-in requirements for early notification. Some can be much earlier. In fact, I've done quite a number of retrenchment exercises the last couple of years. Some companies actually inform me 6 months in advance.
Wow, okay.
So these are very enlightened companies, a very open, transparent, contemporaneous communication. And guess what? Because of the early notification, we were able to do a lot of positive interventions.
Right.
For example, tell me who are the likely workers affected, of course, with confidentiality. Then we will start preparing our resources, for example, E2I, as well as other support measures. So we know what kind of workers are being affected. We don't need the personal data, but at least the profile, age, what skills he has, how long has he been in a job, local, foreign, so that we can try to segue them as soon as possible
to
the
next
job. In other
words, the company is showing that they care for their staff and taking care of them even though they have to let them go, right?
There is a company which my union has worked very closely with, intimately with, where they even allow us to do career fairs during lunchtime.
In
the period between notification and the actual retrenchment. So the workers are fully aware that company is downsizing. They do town halls to explain, communicate, and try to place them, even send them for training during that period.
Okay, but this also is because the relationship our unions, NTUC, has with employers
some
here,
company.
It's generally quite amicable with the government as well. But in many other countries, the unions are on the opposite side.
That's right.
And they say they're fighting for their people. So actually, if this were to happen, the union would say, why are you firing this guy? You got to keep him, raise his salary. I mean, so some would argue that is a better and stronger union. Why don't we take that approach?
Well, both sides of the coin to see it. I think one way, of course, being very adversarial. But I think the key thing is to look at outcomes. Yeah, at the end of the day, what do we want the worker or the affected workers to have at the end of the whole exercise?
That union says, I want that guy to still have his job.
Well, of course, we do a very worker-centric approach, I call a worker-centric approach, meaning in usual exercises, we will see what the worker wants, what the worker needs. We see their profile. Because at the end of the day, they could be wanting the job, but we know, just like any retrenchment exercises across the globe, if the company needs to fold or really, it's in deep depths, there's no way you can resuscitate, then there's really no hope. What's the next best thing you can do to support that journey, to help to segue the next job and to upskill him or even provide temporary help? Just like our latest newly launched job seeker support scheme, just announced just rolled out in April this year, where we provide some temporary help with active labour market policies in place to make sure that they don't get left in the lurch, left high and dry. At the same time, help in the transition. I think that's most of the time what workers want. There may be some who want to just take a break before their next job, but some may be in a sandwich class, for example. They have debt, they have mortgage loans, they have parents to support, children support, so they really need the next job. So I think that's how we address it here in Singapore. To try to meet the needs and expectations of workers and be more worker-centric than ever.
But Patrick, I want to come back to earlier your point about when you're speaking to unionized companies about trying to change these guidelines and make sure that they adhere to the guidelines. We know for a fact that the bakery chain 12 Cupcakes, right, they were unionized in February 2021 by the Food, Drinks and Allied Workers Union. So clearly, even companies who are unionized can be behaving badly.
That's why we came up quite explicitly and openly quite immediately. Not just, but of course, looking at the workers' welfare as the priority, but did flag out, flag out this, unfair practice or, well, I would say not a bit irresponsible.
But it's just flagging it enough. I mean, from the workers' point of view, I want justice. Yeah. You know, I want you guys to not just suggest stuff.
So therefore, there are, because of the way it's not just the non-notification or the late notification, but also there may be other inherent missteps by the company. So that will be handled by Ministry of Manpower. Our priority, in fact, when it happened, the first thing that came up the minds of how about the workers? So we provided, you know, really face-to-face, one-to-one support of the affected workers, try to, you know, bring them together and see how best we can, help them tide through the difficult period and let the authorities do the enforcement and the penal sanctions against them.
But I'm sorry, the staff from 12 Cupcakes will be thinking, oh, NTUC vouchers? They'll be like, come on, man, guys, I just lost my job. Some of them, foreign workers as well, you know, who if they don't get a job within the next week, they basically have to leave the country. Yeah. So, I mean, it puts people in a very difficult spot and they find that these workers have no recourse whatsoever. That doesn't seem fair at all, even though they were part of the union.
Yeah. So what we can do, I mean, it's within the parameters of the law. I mean, what's provided. And in this situation, unfortunate, because liquidators have come in. As we know in our, I mean, Amajit will also agree with me that because of our insolvency laws, whenever the company is made insolvent, either through the appointment of liquidators or receiver or judicial manager, there's a moratorium, unfortunately.
Okay.
There's a moratorium. Means we can't do what we used to do.
Yeah.
We can't take certain actions without leave of court.
And there's a pecking order for who gets paid first.
That's exactly.
Right? Which, and the employees are always kind of last. Last in the list.
Not last, but they're definitely not prioritized. Yeah. So you've got your secured creditors, which are usually the banks.
Yeah.
Then you've got the prioritized creditors. The employees are not at the top of that. They have to also nudge their way there. The laws are really not in their favor on this.
Basically, you would be pretty much screwed as a staff if you're
Or you'll be lucky to walk away with a monitor.
I remember raising this in Parliament on multiple occasions, even in Committee of Supply. And I remember Minister for Law mentioning that, you know, actually, after secured creditors and the liquidators are paid, if you look at the priority of debts, actually wages rank the highest. But unfortunately, like what Amanjit mentioned, by the time you pay off the secured creditors, actually there's not much left. You know? So in this case, we have filed the proof of debt, but you know, fingers crossed. You're right. In most cases, secured creditors like the banks and financial institutions may have the first bite of the cherry because they are secured.
How difficult is it for a staff to want to sue the company for having, you know, let them go all of a sudden?
Sue for retrenchment.
Yeah.
Look, firstly, I always say that it is throwing good money after bad to litigate for employment matters because it's very, very costly to take these things to court. And in particular, for example, if you go to the ECT, wrongful dismissal claim, you have to fit the particular criteria of wrongful dismissal.
Sorry, what's the ECT?
Employment Claims Tribunal.
Okay.
Employment Claims Tribunal currently hears two types of cases. One is salary claims. So, for example, if they haven't been paid salary, it would make sense for them to take it to the Employment Claims Tribunal. And the other is for wrongful dismissal. So, for example, if it's actually a retrenchment and they call it something else, poor performance or contractual termination, then you have grounds to say that the reason that is stated is not the actual reason and therefore it is a wrongful dismissal. But bear in mind there are very low claim caps at the Employment Claims Tribunal. 20,000 if you're not unionized, 30,000 if you are. So this doesn't actually apply to most PMEs actually because their salary outpaces the claim limit very quickly.
Yes.
So it's not a practical solution for many.
Okay.
Neither is a lawsuit. So in most cases, we actually recommend having a frank and honest conversation with the company to try and negotiate a better package. And that can be done. Most companies are open to it, particularly if they recognize the ramifications of not handling these conversations properly.
The fees, the money saved from the lawyer fees, they rather give it to the guy.
Not worth it.
What about companies that are foreign owned? So that's another question. So they come, they set up shop, and then they say, oops, not working. Let me just close it down just like that. And they leave the country. The workers are left in a lurch.
Are there more punitive measures for these kind of companies?
Not that I'm aware of.
So basically, as an employee, I just don't...
It's the same rules. Whether you're local or you're operating in Singapore, I mean, the local employment laws apply to you and the same rules apply.
But the company is not even here and they've left the country and we have no jurisdiction in the other country.
Yeah, but in cases where there's a local rep office or... So very, very important in the financial figures as well. So we usually do ACRA searches, etc., to find out more details on where exactly the vehicle is incorporated, this emanates from, and stuff like that. So usually, if they operate in Singapore, they may still have a local footprint. But like you rightly pointed out, if it's totally foreign-owned, then... Well, we have to find creative ways to chase them then.
So clearly we know what needs to be done. So what's holding us back from making these changes to prioritise our workers?
I think one key thing is, at a tripartite level, I know employers have always, been very concerned about competitiveness and how we could balance and achieve this win-win-win outcome. Yeah. Whether we want to make it more pro-business, at the same time also pro-worker, but it's a difficult balance. So therefore, we have been in conversations. And personally, I feel sometimes some of these companies will say, we are listed companies, we can't inform early, and it may affect our share price if it gets leaked out. And I don't think it's a good excuse, because we have listed companies, locally listed companies, blue chip companies that, because they need to carry out certain exercises, inform the union way in advance, 3-6 months, as I've mentioned. So we have not seen these companies being hung high and dry or being affected. In fact, reputationally, when communications is contemporaneous and open and transparent, you get a lot of trust built between the company and the workers. So I thought this is very, very important, because we don't, just as the guidelines say, just like the law says, not just being fair, but be responsible and progressive. Yeah. I think that's key to managing retrenchments and layoffs.
And I want to jump in here to actually tie this to our new Workplace Fairness Act, which is going to come into effect at the end of 2027. Because if they start notifying earlier, Patrick, whether they inform unions or they consult lawyers or they have some sort of discussion, at least they will be more alive to the fact that their decisions or their rationale for selecting certain people, certain groups, classes, may expose them to claims for discrimination, which sometimes they may not be aware of.
Okay.
Because they just, pick names off a list, or they may have some rationale. But subject to scrutiny, they may be able to identify at an early stage that they need to go back and look at the people, or relook and rethink how they're approaching this.
Yes.
Because they could also be exposed to that down the
road. Exactly. I think one key thing is first of its kind, anti-discrimination legislation. In Singapore, we call it the Workplace Fairness Act. Will cover pre-employment, in-employment, and exit of employment. Okay. So in the course of retrenchments, there are 11 protected characteristics. So, I hope and I want to weigh in, and we laud and welcome this piece of legislation, because it's another,
Is that a tool in your
toolbox? Another ammunition, a weapon.
Right. And this is legislation. Yes. So they're not guidelines.
Yes.
So you can circumvent the Employment Act, but aha, there's another act for you.
Coming. So we are giving them some breathing space.
Okay.
From now to 27 to, get their books in order. But I think most companies, I must say, are generally compliant. Unfortunately, there are a few black sheep. We hope to eradicate some of these few black sheep.
Okay, I think there will always be a few black sheep, But just last words, so for people listening in, many of them are workers and concerned about their livelihood and saying, this could happen to me, I could be the next one. What would you tell them so that they can feel secure in their employment here, knowing that there is some recourse or something to fall back on,
If I'm working for a non-unionized company. Yeah. Because that's the 70%
that most
of us... Or
even for a unionized company, I'm sorry, but it looks like both ways.
That's true.
I would start with, as an employee, you have to look after your own well-being, right? Within the framework of the law, there are certain things you can do, certain recourse you can have access to. Be familiar with that. Be familiar with your own employment documents. Know what you're entitled to contractually. Also understand, for example, if you're retrenched, the recommendation is to be paid between 2 weeks to 1 month's salary for every year of service. So familiarize yourself with the landscape. So when it happens to you, you are well informed and you're not on the back foot. Use your time to also collect good feedback about yourself, etc. So you're ready if you need to move on to look for other jobs. Keep recruiters warm generally. Don't forget that, this may happen to all of us. I think nobody is indispensable. Right. And also work on yourself.
Right.
Train yourself so that you can move on. You're employable. And many people are now starting portfolio careers. Mm. So that's also something to consider, that you're not putting all your eggs in one basket, because that leaves you vulnerable.
My advice is don't walk alone. There are support measures. So whether you're unionized, non-unionized, you have NTUC in the labor movement, and of course, Ministry of Manpower, we have the three T's, TAFEP, TAMET. Now we have... I know Stephen is laughing about our acronyms. Going for the long line, TAFEP, TADM, TADAM, as well as the TAMEM, which is the guidelines and advisory, and of course, upcoming pieces of legislation to better support. And I really look forward because as I shared earlier, we are discussing how best to ensure that notification is timely and that retrenchments, whether it's notification or retrenchment exercises itself, are conducted not just fairly, but more importantly, responsibly and progressively.
I agree. I think at the end of the day, from the workers' point of view, they just want to be treated well, communicated, at the right time. I mean, be told, at the right time, at right opportunity, but also in a humane way.
Yeah.
Right? They know, most of us here also know as well that there is no mandatory retrenchment package. It's really up to the company to, whether they want to offer it as well. And it's kind of nice, I think, if companies can at least factor a little bit of that in their retrenchment
exercise.
Sure
that they care.
Sure that they care. Right? Help people to move on.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to add a final closing point, because even if the companies are not gracious and don't offer this, I feel like employees should also be aware that they can ask for things, right? It should be a negotiation.
That's true.
So they should prepare themselves well with things that they can ask for. Some may cost the company, for example, asking for accelerated vesting of stock. Certain other things don't cost the company much, right? So if you say insurance is paid for on an annual cycle, may I be allowed to stay on till the end of the cycle? That doesn't cost them much. You can also ask for good reference. You can ask to agree a narrative, so it helps you looking for other jobs.
In other words, I wasn't retrenched, but I chose to resign.
Or we agreed to part ways mutually, right? Mm. So there are a lot of things that employees should consider and be alive to as they have these conversations. Yeah. They shouldn't just take it and feel pressured to sign. They should really take their time, ask for an extension of time if they need it, consider their position, and then commit.
Yeah, have that conversation first.
Yes.
The first thing shouldn't be to take a photo of it and post on social media, because straight away it becomes a fight.
Yeah. And you lose trust with the organization. Okay.
Yeah, that's your emotions.
Or join as a union member.
Oh, there you go.
The journey with you.
All right, thank you for coming in and sharing this with us. So, if you guys have been through a situation and have thoughts about this as well, do drop us a note. We do love to hear from you.
Bye for now. See you guys.